This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 130 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and Johnny Stofko joins me.
What's up, everybody? 130, we're bringing to the table an absolute monster. You'd have to see him to believe him, Ben Pekulski.
Yeah, he's an absolute beast. 130 kilograms of pure muscle and hustle. And BPAC is doing some great things, educating people around the world on bodybuilding and fitness and health.
Yeah, not just the body, man. This dude's super intelligent, super motivated. He's coming out with new systems to impact people by the masses. So it's going to be an awesome opportunity for you guys to learn from a guy like Ben Pekulski. Get the pens out, take some notes.
Yeah, you don't get this sort of access every single day. So guys, just a big thank you for everyone tuning into the show, all the five-star reviews that you've been leaving on iTunes. If you haven't yet, if you could just leave us a quick five-star review, really helps us grow in the rankings and really just gets more people's eyes on us. So that's the best thing that you can do for us.
Yeah, guys, share it with your friends. Tell them about the Vision Board. Tristan just mentioned inside access to these people that we get to learn from. And, you know, the importance of staying in contact with us, too, are the questions and the feedback from you guys. You know, having a guy like Ben, you know, perfect example of, you know, if somebody's out there, strength coach or science based, you know, shoot us an email in the future when we have similar guys, you know, we definitely feature those. So stay connected.
Yeah, definitely. So info at thevisionboardpodcast.com. But in the meantime, let's get straight to it.
Let's do it.
Ben Pekulski. Our special guest is Ben Pekulski. Ben is an IFBB pro bodybuilder. He's the creator of the MI40 training system, inventor of NOS training, promoter of intent training technique, and also the creator of Hypertrophy Max training system. He has an honors in kinesiology with economics minor from the University of Western Ontario in Canada. We welcome Ben Pekulski. Ben, welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. It's definitely a privilege and a pleasure.
Ben, we appreciate you stopping by the Vision Board. Like Tristan aforementioned, athlete, teacher, educator. Could you share with our fans and yours alike some insights on maybe some projects you're working on or something in the pipeline for 2017?
Yeah, man. So I get a lot of people that come to me, obviously, for one-on-one coaching. I'm training a lot of pro athletes now, a lot of pro bodybuilders. And you know, ultimately, one man can only reach so many people, which is ultimately why I started the business. One of the biggest questions I get is, you know, Ben, if you had, you know, someone working with you in the gym one-on-one, what could be the most life-changing scenario you could offer and how long would it take and what's the fastest we can get it done? So I'm trying to really resolve that question, answer that question. You know, I don't get to work with a lot of people one-on-one anymore, but if I could deliver, you know, a life-changing experience and something that would be a dream come true scenario for somebody, what would it look like? And, you know, to really transform somebody's life and transform their body, I figured if I could work with somebody, you know, one-on-one for 6 months, you know, I could take really anybody and turn them into, you know, for lack of a better word, a machine who looks and feels like a superstar. So I've basically been spending the last better part of the last 6 months designing my 6 month, you know, the most optimal scenario for 6 months. Like, what would every workout would look like? What would every nutrition plan look like for every different body type? So, you know, if you can imagine, you know, someone comes in to me, they're fat, they want to get shredded. Someone comes to me, they're skinny, they want to get big. Someone comes in, you know, they're big and muscular, but still want to lose some fat and kind of recomp their body while getting bigger. So I'm trying to, like, almost like a choose-your-own-adventure based on somebody's current scenario and where they are. And it's a six-month program with basically a new program every 3 weeks based on feedback every three weeks based on achieving certain goals. So basically, like, every 3 weeks the people will receive a set of very specific questions based on their responses, based on their training. We'll kind of re-guide them on their path. So that's been a huge undertaking, obviously, for designing the products, designing the programs, the nutrition, as well as, you know, those specific questions that it's going to take to determine how they're progressing. So, you know, they have to hit certain very specific goals, very specific objectives. And if they're able to do that, then we can progress them in a very certain direction. So it's pretty cool. It's a pretty big undertaking. But I think it's going to be a good project, man. I think it's going to, you know, help change a lot of people's lives.
Yeah. When are you expecting to release that, Ben?
Well, like everything, it's, you know, there's always delays and programming and stuff like that. But I'm hoping mid-May. So my objective was originally to get it out in April, hoping mid-May so people can jump on it for the summertime. And we're going to launch it more like a kind of semester, like a university program type thing, because it's going to be so much education as well, if you know, available if you want it. So we're going to launch it twice a year. So it's looking like to start June 1st and then January 1st kind of thing every year. So that's tentatively the plan right now. But it's only going to be launched twice a year. You know, we get everybody in for 6 months, knock out the craziest transformations. And I'm going to be directly involved, right? I've got a team of coaches involved to help everybody along the way with your questions and your path. And then I'm going to be involved as well. So we've got, like, forums and stuff set up and regular weekly coaching calls. And it's hopefully be a pretty impactful thing, just trying to make the best use of our time and our knowledge.
Ben, normally I would ask a question about transitioning from athlete to coach and the parallels with the two, but it seems like, what hat would you say you wear? Could you see more educator first, athlete second, athlete first, educator second? What would you say about yourself?
Dude, I don't think we can place it first or second. I mean, it ends up, it's like, you know, at 9 a.m. I wear one hat, and at noon I wear a different hat, and I go home at 5 p.m. and I'm wearing the dad hat. You know, it's a matter of, you know, putting the pedal to the metal with every hat you wear. But when you wear that hat, you only wear that hat, you know? So when I'm an athlete, I'm only an athlete. I'm doing my best to focus on one thing. And that's probably the hardest thing, right? Is, you know, shifting that focus and not allowing those other thoughts and those other distractions to enter your mind when you are focused on that one task. You know, that's where a lot of my focus lately has been on optimizing my brain, is optimizing my ability to isolate that focus and isolate that intensity toward one thing. So a lot of, you know, focus on meditation and shifting my brain states and, you know, trying to really just optimize brain function, man. It's a pretty cool thing when you learn you can, you know, kind of crank your brain up to work at a much higher level if you train it to do that.
Yeah. Have you messed around or researched any nootropics or urogenics in terms of the cognitive enhancing?
No, man. I mean, yes and no. Like, I don't mess around with any of the, I mean, too many of the nootropics. I play with a little bit of Alpha-GPC. I really like that product, which is just a choline donor, right? So if you don't have adequate choline in your brain can't produce acetylcholine. The other neurotransmitters can't function optimally. So I use acetylcholine, Alpha-GPC, pretty regularly. But that's just more about optimizing brain function, right? Like, if your neurotransmitters are depleted, your brain just can't function. You can't sleep. You can't think. And that's a very common thing amongst athletes, right? Because it almost ends up being, like, depleted. But as far as other nootropics, I do a lot of research. I do a lot of reading, but I wouldn't say that they're a huge part of my regime. I mean, I've tried some of them, and obviously they're massively effective. But more so, I'm focused on, you know, how can you optimize your sleep? How can you minimize the amount of stress on your brain and you know, maximize the performance rather than trying to crank it up with other stuff?
Ben, one of your early mentors and idols was Tom Hall, the late, great Tom Hall. What was some of the things that you learned from him, and what are those core principles that you kind of have in your MI40 brand now?
Thanks, Tristan. Man, I appreciate you bringing that up, dude. Like, he was the biggest influence in my youth, and the guy was just a consummate professional. You know, he was a consummate bodybuilder, and he kind of made me realize, you know, what it took to be a great athlete, a great champion, man. He was a heck of a man, definitely one of my male role models growing up. As far as the you know, application to, you know, what I brought to MI40 from away from Tom, just the idea of you know, paying attention to the small, to the minutia in everything, you know, in every aspect of my life. It's the guy was you know, just a professional, man. So when you're a professional bodybuilder, as you guys can imagine, the attention to detail has to be second to none, right? Like, people, you can't even conceive the things that I'm considerate of until you do it. You know, like, it's a little bit ridiculous. You have to be a little bit neurotic. Otherwise, you just can't succeed. I mean, some guys are obviously gifted and they just get that shit naturally, or their body just figures it out. They respond, you know, they don't have to think about it. But myself is, you know, I've always kind of expressed the idea that I don't believe I have, you know, world-class genetics by any stretch. I had to make every little thing powerful and useful to my advantage. I mean, I had to use everything I could to be able to stand up there with the best in the world. So Tom was definitely that guy who started to instill that thought process of, you know, meticulously paying attention to everything you could and use it to your advantage.
We were sharing this space recently with Frank Zane, and he was giving us insight on how important recovery and different forms of meditation have been integral for his evolution and his continued longevity. What would you say your point of difference is that separates you from, you know, some guys that Tristan and I have never heard of?
Well, like I just said, man, it's the ridiculous attention to detail. To the point that, I mean, nobody's thinking the shit I am, and that's probably what makes me a successful coach. Is, you know, some of these guys that I'm coaching are really blessed athletes who have, you know, the capacity to be great champions. You know, I was willing to work harder than anybody else, but I was also willing to do the things nobody else was. But I was also, you know, meticulously adhering to the minutia. Like no one else was, you know, and that's what it took. I mean, my body didn't want to get big, man. My body didn't want to be, you know, 300 pounds or 280 pounds on stage like it was at some points. It just, you know, it was the reason I was able to stay there is because I was that guy reading the research, you know, studying everything I did, plus using myself as the research study, you know, like ultimately it's N equals one. You know, I'm the only person that matters. I studied everything I possibly could about myself and about how the science would apply to me, and then obviously taking that now and applying it to athletes.
When you were on stage and competing, was there ever a time, you know, we talked to some guys who say they were never healthy or never at 100%, but still grinded through it and still got a result. Was that ever the case? Were you ever 100% on stage, or were you always 100%?
Isn't that the irony of it, though, right? So maybe that's the bodybuilding personality. Is I guarantee you may never meet a bodybuilder who thinks they're 100% on stage because it's the quest for perfection, right? And I was far from it, man. I don't believe I was ever close. And that's maybe why so many guys have a hard time giving it up, hanging it up and retiring, is because it's like, shit, I know I can do better next time. I screwed this up and I screwed this up and I got sick and I hurt this and I couldn't train this, or, you know, this happened and got in my way. But I don't think anybody's ever been on stage and believed they're 100%. And if they did, they're probably delusional, you know, because ultimately, like, what is 100%? You know, if Phil Heath is 100% at the Mr. Olympia by his own admission, well, maybe if he trained with me, he could have been 30% better because I would have paid attention to 30%, you know, 300 things he doesn't. I mean, just a name to throw out there. Obviously, Phil's a great athlete, nothing against him, but it's just the first name that came to mind. You know, there's somebody out there who's thinking about 300 things that you're not. So how do you know you're 100%, right? So Yeah, to answer the question, man, I definitely have never been 100%. I've never been close, man. I mean, I don't think my condition was ever good, or at least it wasn't great. You know, could I have been more muscular? Absolutely. Could I have trained harder? Absolutely. You know, and maybe, you know, maybe 75% of the workouts I gave 100%, or maybe even less than that. But there were still those workouts that sometimes something being left on the table. But again, that's a means of perception, right? Is my perception of hard work may be different than other people, man. And most guys that worked with me could make it through half the workout and then they're laying on the floor. But my perception always seemed to be, well, fuck, I could have done another 5 reps there and I could have done another 5 reps there. And if I had a spot, I would have done this. And, you know, it's always the room for improvement.
Yeah, definitely. You just mentioned before in the last few minutes, just that word genetics, Ben. Like, for people out there with not the greatest genetics, what advice would you have on starting and trying to build the body that they desire?
Man, like, that's ultimately why I built my business is, you know, I get that question a lot, man. Is my genetics shit? Or not necessarily mine, but most guys will come to me and say, oh, Ben, my genetics are shit. What do I do? And the answer is, you know, everything starts with execution, man. You know, everybody you ask, why don't you look the way you look? Everyone says nutrition, and nutrition's bullshit. Nutrition is obviously important, but it doesn't matter. Like, your margin for error is so much bigger when you're actually getting it done in the gym. So I started my business to teach people with that, you know, who don't have the genetic advantage. Listen, man, you got to worry about execution first. Like, you can't watch these meatheads train slinging weights like, you know, gorillas and hope you can get the same type of results they can, because you can't. You don't have the ability to build muscle. You don't have the same hormonal environment. It's just different, man. You don't have the, you know, the genetic ability. So you got to focus on optimizing execution, maximizing tension, and making sure you're working hard at every inch of every rep. You know, it's not necessarily about doing a lot. I think that would be the one thing if I went back and could talk to my young self again. It's never about doing a lot. It's always about, you know, it's always quality over quantity. And that's, you know, maybe where I screwed up along the way was believing that I could outwork everybody with my work ethic more and more and more and more and more. And now it's like, well, wait, man, if you learn to strategically track everything, you can increase your adaptations with just a little more stimulus. It doesn't have to be constantly beating yourself into the ground.
Yeah. So that tracking that you just mentioned, is that from nutrition to workouts to the way you sleep? How do you do that, Ben?
Well, step one has to be training, man. I mean, you know, trying to track, as much as it's a tough thing to track, trying to track a qualitative variable for training. So, you know, what's the quality factor? What's the quality score of my ability to execute? You know, did I maintain tension through every inch of every rep, or was half of them shit, or was 100% of them not well executed? And trying to have kind of an objective view on a subjective matter, you know, you want to objectively say, yes, I was awesome at every inch of every rep today, or no, I sucked on some of them, I bailed out. Because human nature is, well, I want to make things easy for myself, as much as people may not consciously be willing to admit that, it's an unconscious thing. Like, your body's trying to cheat, your body's trying to make it easy for itself, it's trying to complete a task, not make a muscle contract. So, you know, our objective as aspiring bodybuilders is, well, I need to make this muscle work as hard as possible, and I need to, you know, create as much intramuscular tension and create that intramuscular environment for adaptation and growth. So that's, you know, step one, man. You got to start with execution.
Ben, could you share a little insight on, you know, so you're standing on stage, you're about to compete, you're about to be judged, your number's about to get called. What's going through your head maybe 5-10 minutes before you step on stage and you show the world, like, your results? Are you nervous? Are you meditating? Could you share some insights on that?
Yeah, dude, I'm never nervous, man. So I guess I came to you know, peace with myself maybe the first or second time I stepped on stage, and somebody said to me, and this kind of really hit home with me, was, you know, Ben, you're competing for that kid who's in the last row of the auditorium, who may be 17 or 18 years old. He's never seen you before. And, you know, you're his greatest idol. You're his greatest inspiration. He wants to be you. What do you want him to see? How do you want to be portrayed? So, you know, every time I'm up there, I'm posing to what is my son, or what is my, you know, a fan of mine who's in the back row, who, you know, one day wants to be up there, has huge aspirations to be up there, is willing to do whatever it takes. I'm just posing to show him the most confident version of myself, really trying to show him that inspirational champion that is inside of everybody, you know. So it's never been a confidence thing for me. Like, it's definitely a meditative thing, trying to transcend the insecurities that everyone has inside. And you know, Tony Robbins, the inspirational speaker, motivational guy, you know, puts it very, very clearly when he speaks about, you know, what is absolute confidence? What does 100% confidence look like? Now, if I say sit there, stand there in a position of absolute confidence, people go, oh, wow. You know, yeah, I can see that. Like, my chest is up, my chin is up, I'm looking very confidently. And he goes, okay, well, now change that 3%. I want you to show a position of just a little less confidence. And, you know, your chest kind of droops down a bit, your chin drops down a bit. And every human can unconsciously notice that. So you need to be that guy who's 100% consciously confident. And, you know, that's always what I try to portray on stage. Sometimes it's tough, man. Sometimes when you don't get that call you're after, you look a little dejected. Or, you know, sometimes I got criticized for looking like I was angry on stage. But oftentimes it's I can't see, man. Like, I can see in the front rows. I'm squinting and I'm trying to look like I can, you know, look like I'm trying to see something, but I just really couldn't see. Oftentimes I get this angry, squinty look on my face.
In terms of mindset, man, because Tristan and I, and probably 100% of our listeners listening to this, will never be on stage and experience that. What would you, how could you compare the mindset to maybe another athlete or another profession of what it takes to be in that top 1% in the world of what you do?
Well, being in the top 1% of what you do has nothing to do with what happens on stage, man. Ultimately, you know, the stage, the joke is, the stage is the pageant. And every day that I'm in the gym is my Olympic event. You know, ultimately, every you know, these guys train 4 years for the Olympics, yeah, to hit their peak once. We're trying to hit our peak every single day because it's not about, you know, the day of the event. The day of the event is awesome. Obviously, you want to look your best, but it all has to build up to that. It all has to, you know, the training has to be 100% every day. The show is, man, it's the fun part. It's the pageant, man. It's not a stress. It's not a, or shouldn't be anyways. It's not a difficult thing, man. Like, go up there, throw some tan on there, throw a smile on, and show what you've been working so hard at for the last 12 months. Yeah, man, so how does it compare to other sports? I don't know if it does, man. I mean, it's a competitive thing, obviously, but by that point, the work is done. it's not like you got to be, well, I mean, I guess you got to kind of be on your game, but it's not like you're trying to, it's not like a Sunday where you're trying to play, you know, football or, you know, footy or whatever against, you know, your rivals at the end of the day, because you can't control what somebody else brings on that day. So it's a very different feeling than a typical sport.
Yeah. Ben, in 2012, you competed in the Olympia. You know, you came 11th in that one, and obviously that was won by, I think, Phil Heath, and then Kai Greene and Dexter Jackson were obviously in the placings as well. Just looking at the pictures, there's not a lot that actually separates you guys. For us at home that don't know the sport that well, what is the difference between coming 11th and coming first?
Great question, man. It's a game of inches at that point, right? It's, you know, that was pretty early on in my career. I guess it seemed like early on in my career at the time. And it was just a matter of, you know, certain body parts needed to be developed a bit more, man. I was still kind of early in my understanding of the training knowledge, and certain body parts just didn't come along as well because my ability to train them, my ability to understand what needed to happen from a training perspective was new. I didn't, you know, have the greatest understanding. So, you know, certain body parts genetically just develop faster than others. I talk a lot in my writing, in my videos about what that genetic factor really is. Like, why does one body part develop more than another? People don't ever think about that. Like, what is genetics? You know, so I kind of try to define that a little bit. But really, it comes down to who's in the best condition. So who's the leanest guy on stage, who presents it with 100% confidence, and also obviously who's got the greatest amount of muscular development that still looks proportional and aesthetic. At the end of the day, man, you know, some guys like blondes, some guys like brunettes, some guys like this, some guys like this body, some guys like that body, right? Like, yeah. It's a subjective thing, man. So any guy can win any given day, and you know, it's a subjective sport, man. So you can't let your outcomes determine your self-confidence, and just gotta go and be your best.
Ben, in the 70s, Wide World of Sports, ABC, would televise the bodybuilding events and the competitions going down. What is the biggest challenge in the industry and the sport today in regards to being mainstream?
Well, obviously, in America, man, the baseball scandals with Mark McGwire and all these other guys, steroids was a massive hit to anything that resembled anabolic steroids. And, you know, every American just demonizes anything to do with building muscle because they associate it with steroids and the negativity of steroids. And you know, they associate the WWF, WWE with, well, that guy killed this guy because he had steroids. Yeah. And that guy killed it, like, that guy killed himself because he was on steroids. It's complete bullshit, man. Like, you know, the guy's got obviously other mental problems. He's on 300 different types of antidepressants and other medications that were prescribed by his doctor legally, but nobody talks about the doctor being negligent, prescribing shit he didn't need. That's the issue, man. I mean, ultimately, and on top of the fact that bodybuilders probably don't help ourselves by not being the most articulate, not being the most, you know, social people in the world, which we tend to be pretty recluse, tend to be pretty arrogant people, so it obviously doesn't help. There's not really a good representative for the sport to, you know, step up and be a face or an image in the media. That seems to not be going all that well. So, and same with Kai. I mean, but anytime you look like a freak of nature, people don't take what's coming out of your mouth seriously.
Yeah. Ben, what are your current goals for your training?
Current goals for my training? Good question. And I still love training hard, obviously. That's my favorite. It's not always what's drawn me to the sports. I've never been a guy who's overly insecure, and a lot of bodybuilders do it for insecurity or picked on or whatever. I've never been a guy that's overly insecure. I just love training hard, man. I love doing shit that other people won't do.
Yeah.
That's always kind of been my thing. And now it's just about how can I master my understanding of exercise, my knowledge, my ability to apply it to myself and others, as far as, you know, perfect execution, maximizing the amount of tension, mastering exercise execution, and the biochemical response that exercise induces, and how do we get nutrition to match that? How can we get nutrition to optimize that biochemical response we're trying to achieve with training?
We hear a lot with athletes talk about, man, I wish I would have done this differently when I was younger in terms of what they're doing in the gym or the recovery. Is there anything that you've had to either change about your training or you've added into that is allowing you to continually to evolve?
Dude, it's funny you asked that question. This morning I wrote a blog or an article I haven't published yet about the biggest mistakes I've made in my bodybuilding career, so I'm sure I'll post that soon.
Let's go through it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's honestly, the list is long, man. You know, there's a lot of dumb shit that I did because you're following, it's the blind leading the blind. You know, you're following the guys who didn't have a clue before you, but they looked awesome because, you know, they were big and they had great genetics and, you know, that's must be what I have to do. And you look back and you're like, God, I was an idiot. If I only knew this 10 years ago, if I only knew this 5 years ago. You know, so that's why I do what I do, man, is like to try to prevent all those kids out there or, you know, people who are aspiring to build their bodies from having to make all the stupid mistakes that everyone else makes. Let's think of the biggest one. not honestly, man, not learning execution earlier. Like if I had actually, so when I was very young, I started paying attention to execution and I started being mindful of it, but I never really thought about mastery. You know, I never really thought about like, man, you know how fast your results could come if you actually master this stuff. And mastery, I mean, this is why I'm building that 6-month program. Mastery is not like a lifelong endeavor. Maybe it is, but you can become extremely proficient in 6 months. And that's kind of what I'm doing, man, is trying to build a program where people can become, you know, what I'm trying to offer is people is control. So if I can give you the control over your outcomes, if I can give you absolute certainty that you're going to have control over the ability to build your muscle, your body, the way you want, isn't that a pretty cool offering? You know, isn't that a pretty cool opportunity for people? So that's what it is, man. Like the place I screwed up is like I thought that working hard would get me where I wanted to go, would get me the body I wanted to, and it got me a lot of injuries. It got me a lot of, you know, it got me far. Don't get me wrong, working hard got me far. But if I would have been smart, I could have been a lot further along with a lot less effort and probably a lot less injuries.
Yeah, Ben, I'm going to fanboy you a little bit here because not every day we get access to one of the best bodybuilders in the world, man. Just watching some of your latest videos, I know I saw one the other day where you were looking at, you're doing a one-arm row for your back activation so you could bench press a little bit better. But yeah. I do notice lately that, you know, you've been kind of lifting a little bit less heavy. Is that intentional?
Cyclical. So it's nothing. It is intentional, man. But it's also cyclical. So there's going to be times when, you know, I'm really hammering away at the heavy weights, and there's going to be times where I'm, you know, doing some pre-exhaust type stuff or some post-exhaust type stuff, or really just more focused on execution and tension rather than just all out smashing my muscles. So yeah. I still use heavy weights, man. So when I'm trying to teach somebody execution, I'm not going to grab the 80 or 90 kilo dumbbells and start throwing them around, because, you know, chances are my execution, one, won't be 100%, or if it is, it'll be for a very small number of reps, and then every internet a-hole in the world will be like, oh, look, what he's form's bad, you know, I'll never hear the end of it. So, so I try to stay pretty moderate when I'm doing videos, which is kind of contrary to what most bodybuilders do, right? Most bodybuilders post their video of their heaviest set. I'm like, well, I don't need people to see me doing my heavy set for my ego. I want them to see me doing a set properly so they learn something rather than just, you know, trying to pad my ego and tell me how cool I am.
Yeah. And we have a lot of guys obviously training, and, you know, I know everyone loves the bench press. Can you just educate them a little bit about that importance of really activating the back prior to actually benching?
Well, man, I don't think I need to educate them on the importance of it. They can educate themselves on the importance of it when their shoulders are killing them and their elbows are hurting, you know? Like, it's kind of one of those things that becomes a necessity after a while. It's like, shit, my chest isn't growing, or my shoulders are really hurting me, and it seems to all be correlated with that bench press.
Yeah.
You know, the best way to do it is you got to watch it visually. Watch me in those videos. If people haven't already watched, check out my YouTube.
Definitely.
Yeah, I don't put out tons of videos anymore, man. I put a lot of stuff on my member site, obviously, because, you know, that's one of the benefits of being a member of my site, is you're going to get regular videos. And then if I put everything on YouTube, then people go, well, what the hell do I need to be a member of your website for?
Yeah, exactly.
So I put a good percentage on YouTube and a good percentage on my member site, but I just try to take care of the people who take care of me. You know, I try to give as much back to the members as I can. Any specific questions they have answered, I answer. Yeah, man, ultimately, if your shoulders aren't pulled back, so if you look at it from a mechanics perspective, if you're laying on your back, the part of your chest or the part of your body that's on top is going to have the greatest ability to mechanically do work. So if your shoulders are kind of rolled forward and you're laying on your back, then you'll notice there's not so much of a discrepancy from the height of your chest relative to the height of your shoulders, if people can envision that. So as soon as I go ahead and roll my shoulders back, now from a mechanic standpoint, the pec has a greater opportunity to actually move the load. And it's kind of something that's hard to explain unless I show you a visual, but it has to do with just the mechanics of how muscles work and physics of exercise. But ultimately, man, if your shoulders aren't pulled back, you're going to end up using your shoulder, your front delt, and your tricep a lot more than your pec. And it's one of those things that's an aha moment for guys who want to build their chest. They're like, oh, wow, you know, I've never felt my chest so much in my life. Or, you know, oh, God, my shoulders don't hurt anymore. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's not rocket science, man. You just got to, you know, spend a few minutes to actually figure out how to do this stuff correctly now, because if you don't do it now, you're going to end up doing it 2 or 3 years from now or 5 years from now anyways, when you got shitty results for the last couple of years.
Yeah, Ben, I work in a gym with 30 other coaches in a big commercial gym down in Sydney, Australia, and it seems like all of us, I'm going to speak for all 30 of us, we all have, like, when I take the shirt off and I look, I'm very specific about a certain body part. I'm always obsessed with, like, my rear delts, the shoulders. When you a guy like yourself who is sculpted from granite with all the hard work you've done, do you have that? Like, do you look at just a small area and you're just like, shit, man, and, like, become fixated over that?
More so than most people. And I don't know if it's fixation so much as just being like, oh, well, I need to do this, and looking for the solution, right? Rather than, like, you know, fixation may be an indication of, well, I don't know what I'm doing. Whereas for me, like I said, I'm trying to, I believe every single time I step in the gym, I have 100% control over my objective, so, or over my outcomes. So if I go, hey, man, I want to build a little bit of rear delts, it's not like I don't know how to do it. I have all the skill set, I have all the tools. I'm like, okay, we'll just go and do that. You know, barring injuries or something like that. Obviously, I've got some injuries and people have injuries. Sometimes if there's an injury, certain muscles just can't be built. So if you don't have injuries, if you have a healthy functioning body, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to build. I mean, genetics, obviously, if you have some weird muscle shape or something, but you know, there's no reason why you can't build any muscle. It's important to realize, man, if you have the ability to build one muscle group, you have the ability to build them all, because you have the same muscle fiber, the same hormonal environment in your body. It's all the same. So people, you know, this quote unquote genetic, I don't have the ability to build my triceps genetically or my gridels genetically. It's all the same muscle fibers, bro. Unless you have some type of genetic deformity or injury, there's no reason why you can't build any body part.
Ben, what do you weigh in the off season, man?
Again, it goes in cycles.
You got 290?
Yeah, I'm sitting 290 and 293 right now.
What's that, 130 kilos or something?
Yeah, I feel svelte. I feel like I'm nimble like a cheetah right now.
What I need to ask you, man, how many calories do you have to consume to keep your weight on?
So now when I'm kind of in the lower part of my off season where I'm really just trying to fix my form, make sure my body's healthy, make sure I'm decreasing inflammation, I only eat about 3,500 calories a day, maybe 4,000. But when I'm growing, I get up to 6,200. And like I said, that goes in cycles, man, because I don't believe the human body can grow linearly. I don't believe it's a linear process. It needs to be a cyclical process. And if you constantly try to push and push and push, just get unhealthy, man. You know, things just don't work well. And then when you want to grow, you can't. And so I just like to do things in a cyclical manner. So now I'm, you know, growing my business, spending time with my family and my kids, and, you know, still training, obviously, and loving that, but it's much less frequent and it's much more specific.
Ben, so I know, you know, powerlifting and bodybuilding, two different sports. Louis Simmons from Westside Barbell on an interview recently was talking about how he goes in, and this is with his students as well. He'll go in on that day, and then depending on how he feels, that's what he'll do. Does it have to be, could you get away with that in bodybuilding, or does it have to be specifically regimented?
Good question, man. I think there has to be a degree of, you know, doing what you feel like doing. I think maybe powerlifting may be a little more lenient with that, because obviously powerlifting is completely dependent on what's my psychological ability to generate output, what's my physical ability to generate output today. Mm. So that's very, you know, obviously makes a lot of sense for powerlifting. For bodybuilding, I think it needs to be a little more timed. I think it needs, because of your, you know, your ability to recover and the amount of stimulus you've subjected it to last workout, I think it needs to be a little more timed. I mean, if it goes one way, one day this way, one day that way, I don't think it makes that much of a difference as far as, you know, what you train. But for the most part, I'll typically train the body part I go in to do. If I'm not feeling awesome, I may do a little bit less, or maybe I'll do a little bit heavy. Because, like, so, man, it's kind of the irony of it is when I feel shitty, it usually ends up being, like, my heaviest days. So,
yeah,
you know, when I want to have a really good hypertrophy-style workout, like, you got to feel good, man. You got to be able to contract those muscles. Yeah. Well, it's a pump, but your brain's got to be on point, right? Your brain's got to be on point to contract those muscles hard. So if my brain's not focused that day, if I'm stressed or if I got something on my plate, man, I'll go in and just lift heavy. I'll lift as heavy as I possibly can, which from my perspective takes the least amount of effort, right? So that it's just a kind of a different mentality.
Yeah. Do you use any compound movements like the deadlift at all, Ben?
Yeah, man, I do. I think they still have a benefit metabolically, especially you're getting a metabolic response. I just love certain shit, man. I mean, sometimes, you know, I obviously train a lot of clients, and I think that certain things just are valuable from perspective of, hey, man, I like to do this. Like, if you like to run, run, but don't run under the presumption that running is going to help you lose body fat. Like, running is stupid for losing body fat, right? It makes no sense. But, or sorry, I shouldn't say running, jogging. If you like to jog, jog. But don't do it under the false pretense, oh, I'm jogging to lose body fat. Like, don't, that's stupid. Like, same with me with deadlifting and squatting and shit. It's like, well, I do it because I like it. I don't do it under some false pretense that I think squatting is the best exercise for quads. Like, no, I'm doing it because I like to squat. You know, sometimes I like to feel heavy. I like to feel like I'm going to black out. And, you know, it kind of makes me go to my happy place.
So working in a gym and, you know, training in a gym, from my perspective, it could be very catty. Like, if you always see the guys, if a dude walks by that's in better shape or bigger, the boys will start hating, you know, like talking shit about something. Does this ever happen? Like, is there ever a scenario in your life where somebody walks by and you're like, shit, man, that dude's a beast. Do you ever, probably never?
Of course. course, man. I acknowledge, man. So I'm probably the guy. I'm the first guy to give people compliments, man. I like giving people compliments for their improvements, for their progress, for the way they look. Like I said, man, I'm not in this for the ego of it, man. I like to give people compliments. I like to let people know they're doing a good job. I'm not usually the catty guy, man, because. You know, I've been there too, man. I've been there and I've been the root of many jokes. I don't laugh at it. It doesn't influence me in any way. Just like, hey, man, cool. Like, if someone's got a weak body part, I'm more likely to be the first guy to go up and go, hey, man, let me know if you want me to help you build that, because I can give you a few tips. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, you'll be a different person. Like, oh, cool, thanks. You know, rather than being the dick who goes, haha, your calves are shit. Yeah. What are mine?
Yeah, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, but on paper it says, you were a big fan of Lee Priest, an Aussie bodybuilder?
Man, so when I started bodybuilding, he was kind of at the peak of his career, and he's just such a mutant, man. Like, he's just his body's phenomenal, right? Like, that man was born to be a bodybuilder. And, I was a big fan of Lee Priest for sure. And you know, still to this day, I'm not a fan, but he's just kind of a little less present, right?
Yeah, what was it about when you were younger and you saw – what was it that you were drawn into about just Priest that kind of, like, you were inspired by?
Well, I don't know if there's been another bodybuilder in history with the proportion that guy has, man. Like, he's probably got a 28-inch waist and 23-inch arms. I mean, just a crazy proportion, right? Yeah, it's just I have a picture of him in my gym. He's wearing overalls and his arms are hanging out. And I was like, Jesus, like, I used to look at that thing every day before I trained arms. Not that I ever did very well with my arms, but he was just look at that, man. It was nice to look at. He was definitely a freak of nature.
Ben, how long ago was it that you decided that, you know, being a competitive bodybuilder just wasn't enough and that you really had to take your business side of things seriously?
Well, man, sometimes life throws you curveballs. My business was built out of necessity. So in 2012, 2011, my girlfriend at the time got pregnant. And I was like, okay, well, I can't rely on... Yeah. Can't rely on a bodybuilder's salary, man. I was doing okay, but you know, one injury or one bad placing and somebody pulls your salary and you're screwed. So I was like, well, it's time to man up, create a business, and provide for my family. So my son was my catalyst, man. My son has been my greatest influence in my life. He's my greatest motivation. He's my best therapist, and my best little buddy.
Awesome. I just saw on your Instagram as well, you just did development business knowledge with Matt Gillan. Was that true?
Yeah, man. I do as many business events as I can. And the concept of building a business is probably just as exciting to me as bodybuilding, building a body was when I was a kid. It's so intricate and there's so many details. You know, how much of a perfect transition is that? You know, when I decided to hang up my bodybuilding career to shift into a business that requires... You know, probably more attention to detail than the bodybuilding career even did. I love the idea of taking on a new challenge. So, trying to learn now to get a little ahead of the game.
Definitely. Okay, Ben, we've hit the personality part of the show, so it's going to be a little bit different to what we've been talking about. Get to know Ben Pekulski.
All right, Ben. So we hear a lot about good days and people having rituals. For our listeners at home, could you share some advice when you're not having a good day, when you're having a bad day, and maybe something that works for you to get through it?
Oh, man. Dude, my kids are my thing now. In the past, it's always a workout. How can you smile? How can you not smile and be in a good mood when you go home and your babies are running at you, screaming daddy to give you hugs and kisses?
Yeah.
In the past, it was always, trying to work out. Never from an angry perspective. I was never really a good angry trainer, but that always was a great way to lift your spirits, right? I mean, people don't realize how much... training is your best medicine in life. Like exercise, man, if you're someone who's out there who's depressed or not happy, you got to find that happy place in training and not necessarily as a replacement for anything else in your life, but even just from that, that hormonal response that you get from any type of intense exercise is literally therapy, man. So that was always it for me. It's just go train hard. And if you can't train hard by yourself, hire a trainer to kick your ass.
Okay, Ben, I'm going to take you back to your childhood, man. What posters did you have on your bedroom wall growing up?
Hulk Hogan, man.
Ooh, yeah.
I had it's funny because I met Hulk a few times, and I said, "Hey, man, dude, when I was seven, I had the Hulkamania workout on the back of my door. and he didn't like that too much. Yeah. He had to tell me that.
when I was
Yeah, there. So I liked some wrestling when I was a kid, man. I liked Elvis Presley when I was a kid.
Nice.
I don't know what else, man. Maybe, I don't know. Let's go with those two. I don't know.
All right, and Ben Pekulski, if three of your closest friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
That prick. I would hope they would at the very least call me that.
Yeah.
Okay, final question, Ben. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites, only rules. They can't be any family or friends, but they can be anyone dead or alive. Who are you inviting?
So, dude, I had a conversation with my life coach. I've got a guy who's been my life coach for, he's now more of a best friend. He started as a life coach and therapist. And now he's really one of my best friends on the planet. He would be there. I had a conversation with him yesterday. It's funny because we were talking about this exact thing because he's 49. I'm just turned 36. And we're like, hey, man, what's it going to look like in 25 years? And so my thought was, you know, how do you sit at the table, man? So one of the ways we approach our lives is how can you bring so much value to the world that you can sit at the table with anybody that you look up to now and have a conversation and bring value to that table? So, you know, who's at the table in 25 years or 10 years or whenever when you're having that conversation with, like, your best friends? It's funny, we had that conversation yesterday. So Tony Robbins, man. Tony Robbins is one of my dudes who I think is one of the most inspirational people on the planet, who's just changing people's lives, and he's just got his mental game so tight. He's one of my guys for sure, man. You know, my business coach, he's one of my guys for sure. That he's just man, he just thinks on such a higher level, and I'm a big fan of that. His name's Alvin Brown. His Instagram is Journey to Personal Greatness. He's a solid guy. You know, Arnold, man, I mean, how can you not love Arnold, right? Arnold's got to be there. He's got to be one of the guys.
Yeah, for sure.
I think everybody probably says that, pretty cheesy, but true. Dorian's still one of my guys, man. Dorian is actually, you know,
have you kind seen of become
movie? Did you see the movie?
No, I haven't seen it, no.
Yeah, have a look. It's one of our friends, Brian Rose. He produced a movie on him. So if you have a look on
London Real,
they produced a two-hour movie together. It's on YouTube, so it's fantastic. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Cool. And I need one more, do I? So nobody that I know is my direct family. And they have to be, you said dead or alive?
Dead or alive, my man.
My list could go on if we start talking about dead people. So let's stick with alive, because otherwise the conversation wouldn't end. Let's think of... How about Warren Buffett? I'm a big fan of Warren Buffett. Just, man, people who are pioneers and who transcend, or they're great at what they do. They're the best in the world at what they do. That's really what inspires me. That's what I want to be. You know, didn't quite get there as a bodybuilder, and I don't think I will, but, you know, got close, and I'd like to now do it in something else. So, you know, become the best at what you do at something, and those are the people I look up to most.
Sure. All right, everyone at home, you can find Ben online. You can find him at benpekulski.com, also at mi40nation.com. On Facebook, he's at IFBB Ben Pack fan page. On Twitter, IFBB Ben Pack, and the same handle on Instagram. Ben, my man, thank you so much for sharing this space with us, man. We really appreciate all the knowledge and all the little insights you've given us today, so we're really appreciative of that, man.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Have a great one.
Thanks a lot, Ben, man. Be good.
Guys, that was Ben Pekulski.
Yeah, dude, what a great dude, man. He did that whole interview in a car.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, yeah, he was running late because he had to drop off his stepson, and instead of saying, like a lot of people would, nah, I don't want to do it, I'll reschedule. Now, Ben's the constant professional, man. He wanted to do it, and yeah, I couldn't say anything more. Like, I've really wanted to speak to Ben for a long time, and I loved what he's doing in the world, and I think you guys will too.
Man, I mean, like, I lived in L.A. for 6 years. That traffic's horrible. I know he's in Florida sitting there. He didn't even mention, like, how terrible the traffic was. He was sitting in pretty much standstill traffic the whole time, still ringing it in, bringing the sign. Dude, the dude's stories about, you know, the difference is you know, what he looks like and how he, you know, people might view that and how smart he is. I love showcasing that.
Yeah, I love it as well.
You know, like bringing that different, you know, showing people a different side of somebody.
Definitely. I think the same thing kind of resonated when we had Lane Norton on as well. People didn't realize that he had that other side to him. And
oh, yeah.
All they see is, like, for Ben is, like, these guys lifting a huge amount of muscle. And
he looks like a cartoon character. He's
an huge amount of weights and building huge muscles. Yeah, you're right.
He's a modern day He-Man, yeah, for sure.
For sure.
Did you ever watch that when you were a kid?
Oh, hell yeah.
Masters of the Universe?
Skeletor was underrated.
Skeletor? I was a big Cyclone guy.
I think about it. Skeletor was ripped. He was probably bigger than He-Man.
Yeah, Skeletor was a savage too, man. So you were a Skeletor guy.
No, I was He-Man guy.
Okay.
But I just want to give props to my boy Skeletor because he's in good shape.
Who was the dog?
Oh, it was Cringer.
From the Power of Battle Cat. Dude, what a beast of a show. Ben Pekulski should have been He-Man.
Yeah, for sure. Guys, next week, make sure you tune in. We've got Mike Dolce and the strength and conditioning coach from the Arizona Cardinals, the NFL great Buddy Morris.
Both of those guys are legends. We've been trying to get both of those on for a long time. We're finally here. Mike Dolce,
Strength and conditioning and then nutrition. You don't get too much better than those two guys. So
world champions, Super Bowl champions, the experience.
Mm. So if you want to kind of increase your knowledge and, you know, really take your own game to the next level, I'm going to be taking notes myself because I need to.
Inside Access, Vision Board Gains. We bring it to the table. Business, entrepreneurial, sports, performance, coaching, mindset. Tell your friends about it. The Vision Board Podcast. Continue to support us. We got you.
All right, guys, it's going to be a big week. Johnny, before you go, your social media channel.
Yeah, Johnny Stofko on all socials. Check the new website out, guys, at www.johnnystofko.com.
Guys, and I'm at Tristan Cannell Fitness. We really hope that you've enjoyed another great episode. I know I have. And like we said, get in touch, tag us on things on social media, and send us any emails to info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. We really love hearing from you, so we'll be disappointed if we don't get a stack of emails.
For sure. It'd be rude if you didn't.
So get there.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys. We'll check you on Friday for the wrap-up. And like I said, next week we got Mike Dolce and Buddy Morris.
Peace.
See you, guys.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.